Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Today, Jacqueline Novak is here. She's a comedian, an author. She performs at Largo a lot. Her memoir is called How to Weep in Public, Feeble Offerings on Depression from One Who Knows. She co-hosts the Poog podcast with the odd Kate Berlant. And I say odd, lovingly. Her off-Broadway show, Get on Your Knees, was turned into a Netflix special directed by Natasha Lyonne. Also odd, but wonderful. Nothing wrong with being odd. I imagine I'm odd. I can't see myself properly all the time, but everything's all right. Things are okay. I do have some grievances. I could put them out here on the show because it is my option to do that. And the last time I did it, I actually got results. But I don't like to use the show like this. But I'm going to go ahead and say it. Now, I've spent some time in Albuquerque recently to see my dad. And I went to Albuquerque a week or so ago for just a day to deal with some stuff there. And I rented Hertz. I've been renting at Hertz my whole life, it feels like. It's not the best. It's not the cheapest. But it's Hertz. They're my guys. Hertz. And I had the car for one day, and I got a bill for six. And I called up, and I said, this is crazy. It's five extra days. And I kind of knew, because it's a little disorganized over at the Albuquerque rental car facility. A little understaffed, not judging. But, you know, you kind of pull your car into a line, and you leave it there. The guy says, park it there. You park it there. You go away. Six extra days. How could it have sat there for six extra days? And I told them I had it for one day. And they're like, well, we're going to have to do extracurricular, extra something to figure out if I'm telling the truth. They got to look at videotape. And I guess you got to do due diligence. But I've been with Hertz for decades. Why am I going to lie? It kind of stuck in my craw. Now, I'm not saying it's not like the top executives of Hertz are listening to this, but I would like some resolution. I've reached out. I've waited. But we'll see. Maybe it'll work out. Again, not a big deal. Not that hung up on it, as you can tell. Taking up pretty good airtime. Five extra days. Okay, that's it. I've said my piece. I've done what I needed to do for myself and for my sanity. Now, okay. Here's the deal with Jacqueline Novak. There's two parts to this. For a reason, I guess I'll go into it now. When I saw the Netflix show, Get on Your Knees, which is streaming starting tomorrow, it was great. She shot the special at the same place I shot it, at Town Hall in New York. And we talked a lot about comedy, a lot of other stuff, but I didn't get to the meat of the matter here. And that's that the special is sexually explicit. And when I was coming up, there was always this idea about, you know, working blue. Either you were dirty or you weren't dirty. And if you weren't dirty, you know, it was better somehow. And if you were dirty, that limited your ability to make money or work or whatever. But it's looked down upon for several different reasons. You know, some people used to say, look, it's kind of a crutch or it's easy to work dirty. It's not. It's not really. Well, because it makes people uncomfortable. It's not. Some people say it's shock value. It can be, but it's still to do thoughtful filth, to do smart filth. It's not a guarantee. It's not easy. Yeah, I don't understand when people say those kind of things where it's sort of like it's a crutch. It's shock value. It doesn't require craft or whatever. It's like it's not that easy. And there was a time where, you know, people like Bill Hicks, the brilliance of him was how he could weave, you know, social political commentary, aggressive social political commentary, you know, with filth. And then, you know, he always sort of said, you know, don't worry, we'll parachute into Dick Joke Island at the end. I don't remember what he used to say, but I always have a big filthy closer. And sort of, if you were a certain type of comic, that kind of set the standard. It sort of laid it out for you that you do your bits and then, you know, the last few minutes, just a big dirty closer. And that was the school I came from. But I also was a fan of dirty comedy since I was a kid, whether it was underground comics, whether it was Carlin, shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and piss, whether it was Cheech and Chong, whether it was Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, sort of looking back on that. Why am I saying sort of so much? I liked that risk-taking of dirty comedy. And I would do it. I would mix it up, but it was sort of part of the repertoire. I guess it still is, but it seems like it's less and less. Like, I don't remember my last two specials. I guess there was some filth, smart filth. There was a dirty close to End Times Fun. I guess it's always kind of there. But all this to say that I had Jacqueline Novak back because we didn't talk about the special thoroughly enough in terms of it being smart filth, dirty, adult content, however you want, blue. The entire show is really about learning how to give a blowjob. Once you know how to give a blowjob, what happens? And then self-reflection. There's three acts to it. So kind of, it's all comedy. It's all jokes, but there is a story. There's an arc to it revolving around learning how to give a blowjob. And I've kind of noticed recently that, and maybe I'm projecting, but I'm not seeing as many dudes doing dirty comedy as I am seeing women. And it's great. There have always been dirty women comics, just like there's always been dirty male comics. But there's something happening now to where I've noticed a lot of young female comedians are doing really raw stuff, man. And I think it's great because I don't always hear that point of view. And it's not a point of view you hear often. I mean, people like Sarah Silverman would do cute, dirty stuff. But I'm seeing real kind of first-person point of view, dirty stuff from a lot of female comics, some of them dirtier than others. And I just don't know if it's a cultural thing or if guys have pulled away from it because of fear of something. But it is kind of refreshing and cringy in a good way to see women talking first person in a sexually explicit, specifically female way to women. I guess I'm just noticing something. It may be me, you know, not seeing the whole picture, but it just feels like there's a lot of good dirty comedy going on by women, which I'm happy about. And I just really needed to have that conversation with Jacqueline. So that's the reason I had her back, to make sure we talked about the blueness of it all. You dig? So here's part one. I think that's how we're going to do it, of me and Jacqueline. The Netflix special, Get on Your Knees, premieres tomorrow, January 23rd, as I said. New episodes of the Poog podcast with Jacqueline and Kate Berlant are out every week. And this is me meeting, I thought, for the first time, Jacqueline Novak.
Sometimes I wish I paid more attention in school, or in some cases, any attention at all. There are probably a lot of things I could have gotten more out of, like literature, and now it's probably not in the cards to go back to school and study the classics. But luckily for us, there's a new podcast called The Foxed Page that dives deep into the best books of all time. This is basically like the best possible college English class, but more relaxed and fun. No pressure of grades or needing to prepare something to say in class. It's only the books you want to read and know about, presented by best-selling author Kimberly Ford. Everything from Cormac McCarthy to Madame Bovary, from classics like Frankenstein to modern hits like Lessons in Chemistry. I love Ireland, but I missed the boat on James Joyce. The Foxed Page has a three-part series on Dubliners, and that's a pretty great starting point. Want to get the most out of what you read? The Foxed Page is for you. Get it now wherever you get your podcast.
Now I'm into a future mode, like, what am I going to take with me to, like, my plan? And then sometimes I'm like, is that going to crush me? Anxiety.
Wait, take with me.
Yeah, I've decided on a future.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What are you taking with you into, like, what parts of your...
The next phase of
life.
What am
I taking with me into?
When
like,
I move.
What baggage am I
When I
leaving?
Move.
You're actually moving.
Well, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I have a plan.
Where? Can you talk about where?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to New Mexico.
Are you fucking serious?
I grew up there.
Okay.
It's so weird. It's like I'm gonna go home. That's where I'm gonna die. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna like a salmon.
Do they do that? Are they one of those? They swim
all
back?
The way. Yeah, they
Wait,
swim back
not
and
up,
die.
Not upstream.
Yeah, upstream.
Are
I think
you serious?
They go down and then they swim all the way back, do the egg thing, and then die. I'm not doing the egg thing.
I think you should do the egg thing. No, the return. Like I feel like
where'd you grow up?
In New York suburbs, like Westchester.
Which one?
Mount Kisco, Chappaqua.
Oh, my first girlfriend grew up there.
Really?
Horace Greeley?
Yep.
Yep. My first girlfriend grew up in Chappaqua.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where did you, like an adult girlfriend or?
College.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I still talk to her occasionally. She called me out of nowhere to sort of reconnect.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, we don't talk to each other hardly at all anymore. And I just like, I think we should check in. And it was really pleasant. And then she, at the end of it, she goes, I'm writing this book.
No. I mean.
And I'm like, so what? Well, what does that mean? How do I fare?
Yeah.
Like, because I was a pretty angry, crazy man. She's like, no, we were younger. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
I have no control over your memories.
God. Well, no. I get freaked out about that sometimes because. Yeah. I remember things people said, you know, like 15 years ago, whatever,
right.
and you know, as clear as anything.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I shouldn't be walking around with that information. Like, it's almost like unfair
like
that we
what?
Can retain just things small
that,
things. And I'll sometimes, like, reference them like they were said yesterday.
Like, things that hurt you or embarrassed you?
Not even like heavy stuff.
Oh, but you would never go back to Chappaqua.
To die?
Yeah. Do you have an emotional connection?
My parents are still there.
They are?
Yeah.
How many siblings?
Two.
Younger?
Older.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No shit.
Baby.
Mm.
The baby. You know, people love to say it.
Yeah.
My sister's in corporate America, brand stuff,
sure.
Product development, that kind of stuff. My brother's an English teacher in Vermont.
That sounds like the life. He's under a lot of snow right now, too. But
and he sent it. Do you love snow?
Don't
I mean,
mind
you're not
it.
Moving to, you're not, yeah.
Like, New Mexico's nice middle. Like, it gets snow, but
really?
It's not crazy. It gets cold, but not crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go. You used to have me on your shows. Now, let's explore that because you would think that I would remember.
I actually don't because I wouldn't, if I were you, remember having done my show, okay? Because it's sort of like someone invites you to do a spot, you show up.
What year are we talking?
2008.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm a little off on the years, but this is probably like, 2007, 8, but like pianos, bar.
Sure. Not a great time for me, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think I was kind of half living there then, doing a show over at Air America, that video show. And I was in the middle or towards the end of a divorce. And that period is
And that's
full PTSD.
Yeah.
That's pre what?
like
pre-WTF, just pre.
Right. Because I remember feeling like, oh my God, like kind of like excited, you know,
like
what I mean?
Mark Maron's here.
Like, no, almost no, almost with WTF, explosion, kind of like,
oh yeah,
he's like getting his proper like do or something. Because
finally, that guy, he got through. No, he landed on his feet.
No, but I just felt like in New York, like, yeah, you know, yeah, like it was just really exciting. I remember introducing you once. I had it in my head. I was worried, like I feel like once introducing you, like I tried to sound fucking cool. I don't know, like, and I just like vaguely remember it and kind of like not being sure, like basically being like, is that still living in Mark Maron's head? Like it's exhausting.
I mean, trying to be cool.
Have you, like, I was just like,
oh yeah, I really remember that. Guy, I'm like, yeah, what's
next
what,
guy,
what's
like,
this,
like what I love about him is, like, you know, that kind of thing. Like I was trying to like be like, this nigga, like, so like
me, I was the old guy at pianos. You guys were the cool ones. I was already
never.
I was already sort of like a veteran. I hate when people do that. This guy's a legend. I gotta quit. I gotta quit.
Right. I mean, that is arguably the prime.
I can't appreciate it. I can't appreciate it all the time.
Yeah.
Can you?
We both did our specials at Town Hall, by the way.
I know.
Which I don't know why I thought that. Like,
yeah,
you
look like you spent much less money than me.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the strip down, you'd see the back wall.
And it's a weird theater because it's not a theater.
Right, it's a public lecture hall.
Theater, so yes. There's a wall. There's no depth to the thing.
Yes, and I kind of was into, like, have you ever seen Town Bloody Hall? It's like Norman Mailer. It's like 70s.
Yes,
like,
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. And I was kind of like, let's get as much as that. And
you
have the wall
to get a
in
dais?
It.
Did you want to get some tables?
considered a dais or like a loose chair. But yeah, definitely it was like leaning into the kind of like that way that it feels to me. It was like
the lights were on in that thing. It was like daytime. It felt like it, on the Norman Mailer thing.
Yes, yes, totally. It's like, yeah, they flicked on the everything. And
I kind of like that place with the lights on. It does have a weird. It is an interesting space.
So it was obviously leaning into that and also trying to, like, to me, I had this idea of almost particularly for this kind of like debut, trying to like breakthrough thing, like for myself, like trying to cut through and get myself a career, you know, like.
Is that the plan?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Got it.
How's that unfold in your imagination? So you cut through. So it happens. What are you doing once you cut through?
Well, the main thing is, you know, hopefully cash flow of being able to tour.
Oh, with the show.
Or tour with new shows,
sure,
right?
Sure, of course.
I mean, it's really like just to.
So you don't have a draw.
I had enough draw to do like a couple hundred seaters with
coast to coast
this show.
On the coasts, yeah, or everywhere.
On the coast, I was able to do like repeat kind of like runs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then on the road, it would be like go to, you know, Minneapolis and do like a 300 seater.
Yeah.
Maybe at a show
maybe
and kind of like
get into the Jewish Community Center circuit.
Oh, I've inquired directly to my agent about this. Okay. Okay.
Don't do it.
What else can I?
Don't do it.
I was like, I need the gigs.
When I had the one person show, Jerusalem Syndrome, which is, it's not a fundamentally Jewish show, but kind of is.
Yeah.
I did a couple of those Jewish community centers. It's just too much.
I mean, well, then the whole, there's like talking about Jewishness in the act, in the context of, I mean, I say like in my special, like when I say Jew, I'm like, I'm a Jew. I don't know why I say it with like an attitude, almost like. Like I think I'm dropping a bomb or something, and it's like, and the word Jew like is so, you know, intense.
And now it's even more intense.
Yeah, it's so I imagine sort of for it to be in that setting, sort of the whole humor of that.
Oh yeah,
confusing.
and their expectations are weird.
Yeah,
I mean, with Jewish, you know, audiences, I don't know. And right now, it's no time to be nebulous.
I'm sorry, I keep referencing your material, but like, I cannot tell you how much I think about like. And agree about like jokes in Auschwitz. Okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
of course.
And they would have been fucking amazing.
People have pointed out. Some guy just he wrote to me. Wrote a whole book about it.
Oh, really?
And I think that Roberto Benigni movie might be about it.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit different than I think. What I suspect you and me are kind of imagining this sort of observational, obviously like gallows.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like
yeah.
I mean,
just like you
Roberto Benigni.
Very thin people. Kind of laughing under their breath
yes.
at the one guy.
So when I picture, just Holocaust-y stuff, right? Like, yeah. I put myself there, you know? Like, yeah. I have these images in my head that are not based on my historical images.
Yeah.
They're just sort of these things, like for some reason, when I picture Auschwitz, I picture myself on, like, the sports field at my high school, okay? Like, I place it there.
Yeah.
And I always place it there. Like, like I sort of envision, I sort of build, like, a...
Yeah.
Do you, I don't, this is
do like, I have an active,
do you have sort of like when you're like,
picture of
when you picture that, like
camps?
Telling jokes, like making jokes, like does your mind paint a scene?
Sometimes, but like, I don't know, like, I think most of the images I have in my mind about the Holocaust are probably from movies and from some of those films we saw in Hebrew school when I was a kid, you know, but for some reason I follow Auschwitz on Twitter. And it's really worked in planting, like, they have the Auschwitz Memorial, they have a Twitter feed. They do. And really, all they do is they post pictures of people, and they say their name.
Oh, yeah.
And then they say the age, they say what they did, and then they say perished in the camps. Like,
oof.
And they're just photographs. And so that...
The word perish is so Jewish to me. I don't know, like...
perish and never forget. But so that's kind of really pounds the empathy part, you know, the really picturing the scope of it. And just the idea of selection, like when I picture it, it's like waiting in a line, wondering if you're going to be random. Like,
yes,
I can't stand when it happens at the airport, when I go through security, just a random, because I've done everything I could. I've done everything right.
Yeah.
And I got TSA. I got no medal on me, and I walk through, and it, boop, I'm sorry, you're randomly selected. For that to happen and then be thrown into a fucking oven would be terrible.
Waiting for any this or that, like, creates great anxiety for me, like,
me
on
too.
The smallest level.
Always.
I mean.
Like, if I walk into a place that has a buffet, it's like, it's a fucking nightmare. Because I'm like,
God.
How long is it going to last? Are we... How much do I got to get? Can I go back? Like,
no, it's
I can't even do
the,
it.
The epigenetics of it, like the trauma in the cells and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. Like right now, like we're going to see this movie tonight.
Yeah.
And the Egyptian, I don't know why.
Yeah.
But they don't have. You can't reserve seats. So now I'm already like, what time should we get there?
Oh, you can't reserve.
Do I even
seats.
Have time to finish this conversation? It's at 7. Should I go get seats now?
Yeah.
So now, when did you start doing comedy?
In college in 2003.
Where? What college?
Georgetown.
Oh, I think I knew that. And you went to school with some famous people?
Yeah.
Which ones?
Jim Gaffigan went there, but he was there before
he's
me.
Like my age, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Birbiglia, Kroll, Mulaney.
They were all there when you were there?
Birbiglia just graduated, but he and Kroll was like directing the improv troupe.
Oh, really?
He cast me and Mulaney in the troupe.
Oh, okay.
As freshmen.
So this was like a student act, like a, what do you call it?
Yeah, a club.
A club, little, right.
And very, like, that school's not like some
And had
art
that
school.
Improv, had that troupe been around for years?
Yes, like Birbiglia had been in that troupe.
But it preceded Birbiglia, too.
I believe it preceded him.
It was just...
And, you know, improv is weird, but I started stand-up around them because it was like, I don't know. I despite the terror of stand up, sort of just being in control and being like, I'm saying the thing. I'm not trying to. You know.
What year was this?
2003.
What was around? You guys were going
open mics.
Out like a little crew of you.
No. That was solo. Like, I mean, like the.
No, but were there other comics? Was Kroll doing comedy? Was Mulaney doing it yet?
He started. Around that same time, we like put up a show together somewhere at some place. Kroll, I don't think he was doing stand up at Georgetown, but right after in New York, he had a show and
I don't think he ever did stand up until recently, in some way. I think he's more recent to stand up. He's always been a sketch guy, right?
He's pretty much his character, like
character driven guy.
So many characters and whatever, but he did stand up. Like in New York in those years, like he had a show. That he hosted with Jesse Klein. So he would do, you know, like stand up. That's kind of where I started
world.
In New York.
So you started
around that time.
In the established alt comedy world of New York in the mid aughts.
Yes. Great time, like in the sense of sort of, it's always hard to say if some venue right now is what that felt like to me then Or if, you know, like, it's not like it used to be, you know, like.
Well, I mean, I talk about that a bit with people that, you know, who really came out of that alt comedy world, you know, in terms of like stand-ups. I mean, most of the stand-ups eventually find their way into stand-up clubs. But there was a whole scene down there. I don't know where a lot of those people are, but they're kind of around.
I mean, a lot of people end up writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people.
It doesn't exist now, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it doesn't.
We used to make an argument that, like, really a lot of big comics didn't come from alt comedy specifically, because there was a movement here that was a little different.
And that's always, you hear, like, that's the true original alt.
Well, I mean, I think LA, New York came a little later, but because I was part of that. But there were some of the same players, but out here. Back in the day, like with Beth Lapidus, Uncabaret, and the bookstore shows, and Largo, the original Largo, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And then in New York, it was Luna Lounge.
Right.
And then things sort of spawned out from that. Because you had that performance art element in New York. So those weirdos were around.
Totally.
And then I think it all grew out of that.
Yes.
But then it sort of shifted with, you know, when comics just would host shows in Brooklyn venues and shit, they just became more straight stand-up, really.
Yeah.
Didn't they?
It's hard to say. I mean,
Rafifi's was kind of like a crazy town.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on there.
It still felt to me, for whatever reason, and maybe it's just because I was so focused on stand-up, that, you know, to me it really did feel like getting up, like doing that show, like, okay, like I better, like I'm proving myself as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And like, maybe if I, like, that's what I'm here to sort of give. I'm not doing some weird thing.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So it was almost like, so I better. I think there's some people, like, sometimes I feel like there's this thing about, like, the people who end up, you know, like, writing for television, like, almost like they sort of fell out of the thing. But it's also,
no, they're just
like,
smarter than we are.
They might have.
They, like,
that was the way to do comedy for them then. And then.
Well, if you get up on, like, look, being a stand up is stupid.
Yeah.
How are you going to fucking make it?
Yeah.
So the people that know well enough that, like, well, I can write jokes.
Yeah.
And I've learned that they're good. So what do I need to stand up there for? I'm going to go write jokes.
But so what is it in us? I mean, what is it in us?
I don't want to fucking write for other people.
No. Yeah. And so I take pride also in the, like, that it's not enough that, like I sort of, it's like pride and not exactly shame, but sort of like, I don't know that I don't know that I could really write jokes for other people well.
I couldn't.
Like could you, like, like a late night packet or something? Like, I
never
couldn't do that.
Never. Me neither. And eventually I've just sort of like, it's probably pathological.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem to be like this weird kind of like, I'm choosing this.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, it reminded me when you're talking about the improv group. I remember when I was at BU, I wanted to start an improv group at BU, and I put up posters and I had a name, and I was going to get people to come, and I was going to start it. And then when I had the meeting to start the improv group, I realized I'm not a leader, and I don't want to have anything to do with this.
Yes.
I don't know how to do this. So I think there's something for me.
Yeah, yeah.
What it was is that, like, me doing stand-up was a journey of self-defining. It was not a job.
It's
Like, I need to, this is how I'm going to figure out who I am in the world, how to have my own space, how to have my own voice.
Yes.
And I wasn't even aware of that, but I always thought it was like, I never thought like I'm an entertainer. I thought like, this is where I'm going to figure it out.
Yes, yes.
And it's mine.
I feel very similarly. I feel like part of the, you know, as someone who gets inspired and like sees like puppeteering and goes like, I want to do that. You know, I feel moved by something, I want
to
do it.
Then you buy the tools to make the puppets.
It feels so good buying the tools. Like that day at the beginning of a potential artistic pursuit. I love like buying the books, like loading up on the books and spending too much on the books that are coming.
Yeah.
But with stand-up, I think the reason that it's stuck.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like self-defined? Like it felt like this. This is so like hard. I'm so self-conscious. Like to master this, I've mastered something in myself. Kind of like
exactly. And like even if you're not aware of that,
yeah,
it is sort of this thing where you kind of live and die by your own thing. I still kind of feel it sometimes. You know, like when I get a new joke going. Like you go through ebbs and flows of this thing. Where like there was a bunch of months there where I'm like, I was putting together this new hour and it's kind of there, but I'm bored with it already.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now I've got a few new bits that are pretty, you know, they're pretty edgy. And I'm like, it's still kind of exciting. And I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like to really get to a place where you don't give a fuck is the greatest. And I just had this thing happen recently where I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? At this age, I've been doing it this long. And I had like this a flight of insecurity that was very specific.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you're going to have to kill that.
Yeah.
Because it's very specific.
Yeah.
It's when an established act goes on before me and they kill and everybody knows who they are. There's still part of me that thinks like, ugh, now I got to try to do it after that guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, who? What the fuck is that?
Now, are you imagining sort of, in your mind, does this crowd like not know who you are as much as they know
that.
How much they
that's
are?
That's right.
So, or some of them
there's
do,
some of that.
So they're kind of like, and then who's this guy a little
exactly,
bit, right?
There's that. But then there's also this sort of like, I'm not a fun act.
Oh, totally, totally, totally. No, right. There's not a sense of like, I can go out and sing my song.
Yeah, it's like, now this next guy's just going to keep up this fun
well,
energy.
It's also part of the showcase. Like problem.
No, that's true. Everyone does the
like
same amount of time.
And you know, but just like someone should come to see you. They should see an hour. They should go into your
that
world.
I thought you meant like a showcase club is one where everyone just goes all,
no,
on the same
no,
amount
right.
of time. Yeah, look, I mean, last night I was at the Comedy Store and I did an early show. It was some guys, you know, comic producing, and you know, sometimes I get there early, I'll go on. That was fine. Then I do the main room, and it was okay, but it took work. And Bobby Lee went on before me. He's like, "Whoa!" You know, Bobby's very Bobby,
and
I love him. He killed, but I knew I'm like, dude, just it doesn't matter because, like, just do the jokes that you are enjoying right now, and see if you can land them. And if you can't, fuck them. And then I did a set in the original room later, which was hard. The main room and the original room were both hard.
Yeah.
And fucking Chris Rock was sitting in the back
God.
Whole thing. But yeah. I know him. I know all these people.
No, right.
But you know, I'd done two sets and I was sort of like, I can't lose.
But do you get,
I can't lose.
Does a like Chris Rock, like, does he give you your, does he acknowledge?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, they definitely do. But,
They've said
sure.
Firmly.
He tagged my joke. He came up and he's like, I got a tag for you. So like, there's still part of me that's sort of like, I'm not of them.
Yeah.
I'm
well,
not,
you called yourself like a medium celebrity or something like that, and you're
mid-level,
right? Okay, mid-level.
That's honest.
And it's thing we're talking about success,
better.
Right?
It's
about
better,
like what's the goal,
what's
the breaking
winning.
Through?
Yeah.
And it's like the way I've gotten really like literal about it is like, all right, if I had to go tour for the if my special didn't come out, no new fans, I could probably go tour a new show to those same 300 people from last time at the City.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. In theory, special goes out, I should get some new people. The people that like me should find, you know, in theory.
Yeah.
And that's like really straightforward, you know?
Well, this is an interesting thing because I relate to you. Like, I didn't have a draw forever.
Yeah.
Like, forever.
Yeah.
Like, by the time I started the podcast, I was just looking at a future of, you know, shitty rooms.
Yeah.
Where I'm doing off weeks because I can't sell tickets.
Yeah.
But I get a lot of respect in the
business. Yeah. I wonder if you're... The insecurity, the very specific one you're talking about, like, because I have that kind of in this mindset of like the trade of stand-up, like tradesman. Okay, like you know this thing, like I can get up in any room in this world.
Oh, you
okay?
got yeah.
Okay, I can get up in any room in this world and make those, those fucking
that's
flats.
That's the job. Can you do the job, Jacqueline?
And it's like there's a part of me that's still. like I'm very like that's why one woman show concerns me when that term
sure
is
of course
or like even
oh so you're doing
marketing.
That theater thing now so you're doing a theater thing now like you're doing the one
they're like
show
what is
thing?
That someone like a comic was like you know how does that compare to stand up and I'm like check the laugh count you know what I mean like I'm like
yeah
I'm like you know like if like LPMs or whatever is hysterical
sure,
like I read that like on a comedy website once.
yeah 30 it's seconds like, you should be like you gotta get one every 30 seconds I'm like that's too short I'm
not
gonna
what
give
about,
me a little
what
more
about
time.
Longer
setup,
lead,
longer setup,
deeper?
No, it doesn't apply
response.
Anymore.
But the tradesman fear of like, I don't know that in a showcase show I can get up and sort of
nail
get
it,
them, you know, like
for
in
eight?
That way. And
you
also,
so?
You're trying. I can. I sort of. It's sort
I came
like,
up doing that.
Yeah.
I don't. I stopped giving a shit about it.
Yeah.
But it's all about the strong opener. If I have a really good first joke.
Yeah.
Then that, like, I feel safe.
Put him at ease.
Or something. Yeah. Just sort of like, I'm in. Yeah, now it's mine to fuck up.
I feel
up.
Like I've never landed on a true opening joke because it requires this kind of, like, acceptance of what they perceive. It always feels like, not just like a, yeah. not just like, I know what you guys are thinking. Right?
No, but not
like,
one of those.
Yeah.
I know what I look like. I look like this mixed with that.
Yeah. Although, like, you know, yeah. when it's done well, like, Attell yeah. does it and I'm screaming. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, Andre Agassi with Drinking Problem or something like that. Like, you know, it's like, you know, anything.
Attell will churn
well.
Through, he'll do a whole set of opening jokes.
Oh, my
They're
God.
They're all so good.
They're all so fucking good. I'd like a new hour from him like now. Like
sure.
That'd be great.
My first special was like an hour and a half and I had fucking
Mine's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I thought I could almost edit it like audio. Like I was way too I was like, oh, but if you just remove all the ums and the likes and the whatever, I'm like, this thing's down to 86, you know? And they're like, yeah, like I don't know why I thought it would
Did
be that easy.
Did they try to bully you
with,
into
like,
73, 75, you 70
know,
hour?
I think they let go.
Did you self produce it? Or did they do it?
No, they did it.
Oh, good.
They did it. And then I keep paying more to, like,
to
go
what?
Back and edit more. And blah, blah, blah. Like, I just keep.
It's done, though.
Oh, yeah. No. We're done. I don't know. What has your experience been in post in terms of, like, I've heard this thing, like, they're like, oh, let the editor cut it up, and that's it.
Oh,
do you, like, trust, do you feel comfortable with that?
Depends who the director is. Lynn Shelton did two of them, and I trusted her because she knows me.
Totally.
But no, I was there.
Yeah.
You know, and I chime in.
How
like,
do you
when they
feel
got,
when you're watching your own shit?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I only get mad when, like, I know there's a joke on that special that I fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't. There's like two.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just because I just didn't do one beat.
Yeah.
Or I spaced something.
Totally.
So I get hung up on that. And the last special, Fine Arts directed it, and I thought it looked good. Like the vision for that backdrop was mine. It was there was a collaborative effort around it. I think I looked all right, but I've gotten rid of that haircut. So it becomes things like that. Like, like End Times Fun, it's like I never wore that vest again. And I don't know why I do
did
that.
Did you wear the vest a lot before that?
Never. It's so stupid.
Isn't it? Okay.
But then when I did Too Real, I wore a chamois shirt that I've worn my whole life.
Yes.
It had a hole in it.
Yes.
And I watched it. I'm like, what the fuck am I wearing?
I know. Getting that shit, like, also the thing that happens of the, Oh, it's for real now. I got to get the right outfit or whatever it is. I don't know why it's. I mean, that's why I'm in a jeans and a t-shirt, like, because I just.
No, I liked it, and I thought the whole thing looked very comfortable.
Yeah,
like,
good.
And it almost looked kind of like you could have done that in with no audience.
Yes.
Like,
no.
There was just sort of like we're just gonna let's just go into this place and do it.
Yes.
So I like this idea that. The struggle that you have in terms of perception of you is because you came, like, you're a real comic, but you came out of goofy alt comedy land.
Right.
So, you know, you had to fight a little extra harder to justify yourself to other real comics that you're a real comic.
Oh, well, and then the nightmare of me promoting my own, like me putting my show into the glorious theater setting, the way that I was able to do it is like this theater model of being able to put up the show and have it sit there and have people like, I mean, it's almost like, where do you do stand-up comedy? Like, unless you're already the act and have fans,
that's
like,
right.
What the hell can you do? So if you could, like, so the theater thing was like, I mean, it was
smart. It was a way.
It was so helpful.
There's a world of it.
Yeah. And even if some of that audience, like, is a little, like, theatery where it can get a little, I would start to feel precious.
Yeah.
Literally, like, when certain audience, like, I much prefer doing it ultimately at the Bell House, right? Like,
right.
That kind of raucous vibe.
Yeah.
To me, it's, like, much more interesting when they're, like me being sort of, I don't know, whatever, like, philosophical or something in a theater is, like, precious. And, like, they listen to me. They almost listen to me like I'm, like, telling, like, a trauma narrative. And I'm like, guys, no. Like,
well, yeah.
I'm trying to be, like, funny about this. Like, this is not, they're, like, a little too respectful.
The only other way to go would be to do it in chunks and, you know, and then if you were a headlining comic. So
exactly.
So that's not where you're at.
It's the only way also to be like, to kind of break through and go, I'm doing this.
I got the time.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Here it is.
Yeah.
Like, and I decided if it was a failure after 2 weeks, like, of the previews or whatever. And Birbiglia did late shows, so it was sort of like, it wouldn't be this total bummer for him. Like, he's renting the theater, essentially helping me do this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel super guilty because he got shows out of it, like, you know, if the show failed. But I was just like, if nothing.
Oh, he actually went on the nights you did your special?
He would do. Like in the initial run to kind of like produce it. He would.
Oh, at Cherry Lane?
Yeah. And then he was like, he did some late shows, kind of working out and stuff for to kind of help, like,
for his
the box
death,
office.
For his death show.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And the point being, I decided, like, all right, even if this goes horribly at Cherry Lane, it's 2 weeks of stage time on this show, stand-up show I'm working on. And who, like, it'll get better. And even if there's a bad review of it as a theater piece, like, who cares?
Yeah.
I could still, like, advance my goal towards it being a special, stand-up special. So that was, like, my, like, worst-case scenario that helped me sort of...
For me, it did feel like stand-up special. It didn't feel like a theater piece.
It did feel like stand-up?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, thank God. No, because, like, you know, particularly at one-woman show, like, there's this stench of not being the tradesman. Like, I am, like, that's where I'm, like, no. Like,
no, you're definitely
my heroes are a tell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
No, you're definitely the tradesman because, like, all that stuff breaks into bits eventually. You know, and you're not... Yeah. I think that the real marker of a one-person show is the tender moment.
Yeah.
Which you don't do.
They call that in Edinburgh the wanky bit. Okay, I heard this. Like, I didn't know. They're like, well, you know, you need a wanky bit or whatever.
Do you have a wanky bit? I don't remember.
No. Mm-mm. I mean, you know, I'm like scanning. I'm like, is there a moment where...
Well, you know the moment because, you know, it's designed to
give.
It's designed to give the show some emotional depth.
Right.
Where you just sort of like you sit down quietly and you're like, okay, I'm going to tell you something real.
Yeah. Well, I remember like.
I've done plenty of wanky moments.
I mean, and also, wanky bit.
Wanky bit.
And they mean bit like, you know, like little bit, like you know, it was like a wanky bit. I was like, what? Like, they're like, you need one of those to sort of put it into the next level, right? Like, transcend the form or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I try to avoid that.
No, and I thought the way that you shot it all stripped down made it very immediate. And, you know, it did. You definitely knew where you were going.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a couple of improv-y moments. You did some crowd work, I think.
There's
you asked
some
a guy
talking.
A question.
Oh yeah, yeah, but that's like
a setup.
Oh, that's like I almost cut that out. I was like, I mean, not the bit, but I almost just removed like utilizing I utilized them to yell freeze for me to do my act out.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of like,
yeah.
I was just like, really, I'm giving this guy air on my.
Well, no, I've done that too. Like I won't. Fucking worst. I don't remember which special it was.
Yeah.
I don't think we left it in there though. But I shot it at the Vic in Chicago. Goldthwait was directing it.
Oh,
and,
amazing. Amazing.
I had to deal with a drunk fucking heckler.
No.
When I walked out.
No.
For my special.
How?
When I worked out, I'm in it with a fucking drunkie. I couldn't fucking believe it. I can't remember if we left it in.
Wait, which when you...
That was that was more later, which is harder to find than the rest because it was on Epix.
Okay.
But yeah, I think you could watch it on iTunes. All right. So, like, I thought this special was great and I thought it was very funny. And, but wait, so you're depressed?
I'm actually really good these days. Like, it's been a...
So the depression book, you got all that out of you?
It didn't get it out of me. I mean, or I kind of, I couldn't finish it until I was really out of that. But I was trying to, the premise is sort of like, I started writing it while in like living at my parents' house, pretty like just depressed. And I was kind of like, it was sort of infiltrating all my writing as is. So I was like, instead of trying to not have it be in the writing, what if I like kind of wrote from it, saying I'm writing from it, and it's sort of this like letter or sort of this like, me to another depressed person, kind of keeping them company. Because I would take all these self-help books like into my bed almost like, okay, and like read them like, okay, maybe one of these will help me get out of the bed.
Yeah.
But there's like an alienation from the writer because they're writing sort of from the other side. You know, they're writing from,
so you
can't really trust them. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to sort of be the book that you kind of take the break from trying to get out of it and you're just there and it's, just you're depressed and it's fine. And
that's a good name for a book, sitting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of a mindfulness like angle on that ultimately. But
you feel better?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been on the same, you know, cocktail of sort of, you know, antidepressants for a really long time at this point. I mean, and, you know, they're like, do you have any questions about your medication? I'm like, can't you see on there that it's. Like, I'm just like, it's just every year the prior authorization with the insurance, and like I space out, forget it's got to happen, and then like there's like 5 days where
where you're thinking
where
about
I'm,
it?
Where I'm waiting, like where I don't have the medicine? Know, the Lamictal or whatever. And it's like, and...
So Lamictal, were you bipolar?
No, you know, at times I ask, is this depression brought on by, you know, OCD, like all the comorbidities? What is the source? Sometimes it feels like...
Anxiety paralysis.
Oh, anxiety, like, exactly. I've always felt that it was anxiety that I then, like, channeled into, instead of...
You get overwhelmed and, like...
Yeah, and so then I flop.
Lethargic, yeah.
Instead of, like, an active thing, and I sort of, like, train myself to flop, and then I think I had to train myself, like, to not flop.
Kinda. Yeah.
And, but... Yeah, but like, you know, the antidepressants kind of form, like trying to make my life as conducive to not, I mean, it was almost like, part of it was almost like, fuck it, like, might as well also like go for the dream.
So you were like
not
going to
kill myself. I mean, I never was going to kill myself. Yeah. I just knew I was never going to do it. I mean, except then again, those who do like are in a state that they might not have thought they were. So, you know, like. Respect, essentially.
Right.
But I sort of was like, I'm never going to do that. Like, I'm just not going to do that. So the alternative here, it was almost like, might as well, I was like staring at a wall. I was like, might as well go for it, like go for the full dream. Like, and kind of.
Take contrary action.
Is that a like a mantra of, for depression specifically or various
it's recovery
anxiety.
Mantra.
Oh, okay.
It's like, it's sort of contrary action is just, you know, just do the thing instead of sitting there like, I'm not going to just do it. Like I do, it will pound you new neural pathways.
Yes.
Like, cause like, I don't like exercising.
Yeah.
But like now, like the voice through exercise is louder than the one like, well, I don't have to.
No, the habit, the thing that is comforting is that like, you know, and I see these infographics, you know, and whatever, and it helps me. But like, where it's like, it's not going to be as hard every single day. That thing, like the brain, the whole like same thing about the brain likes to make a habit.
Yeah.
So then it's going to help you. And I do find that true. I do exercise, and I like now I, you know, like quote love it. You know, like.
Food's a whole other issue though. But.
Addiction wise.
Oh, it's just like, I'm so like body image weird because my mom was. And like,
okay,
I,
but you've leaned.
It's like, but like, it's.
But you've never like. You've
been
never,
fat?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, not really.
Because I was looking at you during the special, I was like, you know, like for a guy who talks about kind of. You know, like, I don't
being
even know.
Not healthy?
Or just sort of like, you know, a cerebral, the whole thing, or any of these anxiety, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, like he like never turned to food. Like, I was like, God, like, I've always wondered about those people.
I always think about it. No. I'm like, food is the worst thing in my mind.
In terms of like
compulsive eating, restrictive eating, controlled eating, shame about eating.
This is like
it's nonstop, dude.
I'd come back for
non-stop.
Like 5 hours to talk. This is my favorite subject. Because
really?
Like,
you know Nikki Glaser?
Yeah,
talk to her about.
No, we did like back in the day. I've never I used to think about going to OA.
Yeah, I did as a thin person. Not it's not welcoming. They try to be open about it, but there's definitely a vibe of like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, and you're like same side of the, it's a different side of the same coin, the whole thing. Yeah. But that's the only place that I like, that, you know, like kind of the addicty stuff that
you
hear.
I loved being on Weight Watchers, even when I didn't need it. Like, I never really needed any of these, but just the whole restriction thing just became this day-long math problem.
I don't know. I struggle. The restriction thing sets off such a... counter, you know, the desire to like fuck it.
Yeah.
That I have to kind of like go another way. And I have to, I love these people. Like they are my, like on Reddit or something, I was looking at this thing, these like volume eaters, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, they want to eat stuff that like fills them and a lot of volume, the opposite of like the small, indulgent piece of dark chocolate, you know, like the French woman eats or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, how do you get volume out of blah blah blah? Like, how are we making our like?
It's like volume hacks, like food hacks.
To give a bigger, and that's what I want. I want a big plate, a big bowl that like takes time to get through.
Yeah,
that's to me like heaven. It's like is like, you know, television and a huge bowl of whatever, and I just know I have this like runway ahead of me.
Oh yeah,
of enjoyment. Like,
AirPod popcorn is good for that.
Oh yes, the volume people are big
I
on
love
that.
It. Oh yeah,
they're popcorn. Popcorn. I like immediately saw popcorn when I heard it. But in the way they talk about it, like
I used to make air pop and spray it with like butter spray and like have fine sea salt on it.
Yes.
And just knowing that like we could just make another batch right after this one.
And I no. It's yeah. So I it's always.
And if you're alone, you can just like really eat the fuck out of it.
Well, one of the most important things in like a relationship or a friendship to me is like, can I eat with these people?
Yeah.
You know, like freely, sort of. I think I'm like the best person to go out to dinner with because I sort of predict and anticipate and reduce shame on the other person's part. You know, like people do these things about like kind of like. I don't know, like, oh, maybe, like, they're almost testing the waters of whether you think what they're getting is going to be, like, too much.
Oh, yeah, or fucked
up. And I'm like, get it.
Yeah, my girlfriend is, like, she's usually pretty honest with me. And the other night, I was driving home from the comedy store, and she's like, yeah, I'm just going to make myself something to eat. It's like 10 at night. And I'm like, yeah, what do you got going? She's like, biscuits.
Oh, my God. Okay, this person... That is
am I resenting her?
No, but I'm wondering, are you able to not eat, like, you know, this thing that you're not supposed to eat right before bed? My favorite thing in the world.
Oh no, I'll eat right before bed.
Okay, you'll go. Okay, because that I want to go load up on sort of the healthy that then I can freely consume it, sort of feel like,
yeah,
you know, all right, I can eat, like. I mean, Weight Watchers the one thing I kind of get behind with them when I hear it would be like, well, you're allowed to have unlimited, you know, whatever, like
0 point foods. You know?
Yes, and I'm like, I start picturing like, okay, like I can make this lettuce or whatever.
I used to do that all day when I was on Weight Watchers. I'd just be like, how many 1 or 0 point shit can I load up? And then I like do it for like all day, and then I get to the end of the day and I had a certain number of points, but I'd only use like 10, and I'm like, now I'm gonna have a pizza piece.
Yes.
Slice of pizza, 900 points.
Yeah.
I earned it. Well, I'm very happy we finally talked, and I think this special is very funny. How did Natasha end up directing that? And whose idea was it to, you know, just have a spotlight and an empty stage?
Yes. So Natasha saw me do an early version in L.A., and we knew each other a little bit. But
Natasha
Leon. Yeah, she's got like pumped about it and like texted me and was just like, what is it? Well, like she just was really, she really responded
to kind of
the language.
A pumped Natasha is like, you can't get a word in.
It's great.
It's coming at
you.
It's so
heavenly.
Yeah.
And then my whole feeling kind of in that tradesman sense was like, I want people to feel a little like afraid for me versus like slick and like I'm already like a star or something like that.
Yeah,
I just wanted like, my analogy was always, like, to me, like, it would be scarier if you walked into a room and there was, like, just, like, a spotlight on a tightrope, you know? Like,
yeah.
And then you're really locked into, like, oh, God, there's a guy walking on a wire.
Yeah.
Versus almost, like, Cirque du Soleil, where it all just becomes, like, animation.
Sure.
So, strip down, like, a little bit of the, like, I can get up in any room and da-da-da. Yeah. But in my case, it's sort of, like, I wanted almost... everything stripped down, outfit, neutralized, like I guess it's a little bit of this, like, chip on my shoulder, like, look, boys, I don't need anything. Like,
yeah. And, this is the real deal here.
Yeah. These insecurities, you know, everything's like a
I'm not fucking
you.
Around.
Yeah, a wall.
No shields.
Let the spotlight chase me around, that kind of shit.
I liked it.
Yeah. Thanks.
So you're just going to wait for the people to start coming in?
Oh, my God. I actually decided, like, this is the moment where I have to completely direct my own mind, like, and only feel, like, I have to be doing things.
Yeah.
I cannot sort of wait for a reaction of any kind. I can't fucking handle it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't let...
Oh, yeah. No, it's the worst.
I can't let compliments in.
Yeah.
I can't let... Like, if you let the compliments in, then you're... Sort of validating the negative. It's just like...
I don't know. It won't last long. You know, let the compliments in. They'll go
really?
Away naturally.
I feel like
you have to stop them from coming in. The first negative thing that'll happen will erase all the compliments.
I know this about myself. Yeah. This is why I just like shut off notifications.
Yeah. I was like, no, just take the compliments and realize like this is only going to last about 40 seconds.
Take him with
the- where's the bad one? Where's the bad one?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I hope it. I hope everyone loves it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go. That felt whole, and we definitely had a great conversation, but it was bugging me. So I had her back, and we did another, you know, I'm sure Brendan wasn't thrilled to have another half hour of content to edit, but I had to have her back to talk about specifically dirty comedy, blue comedy, smart filth, and the female point of view of that in this the second piece. This is me and Jacqueline again. You know, during award season and Sundance Instagrams from IndieWire, it's these times where I realize I'm not in real show business.
Is it because there's all these people, like, they can't show up because they're, like, just seeing it all unfold?
No, it's like, you know, I had all those dreams. Where am I? I'm on the sidelines doing this.
This is
my show business.
Right. Now, is it, but you are in, you're like, what's the piece? Like, what's the piece that's missing? Writing and directing?
Well, that's going to happen. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's at a certain level. I had this discussion. You know, it's either, like, there's some part of me that thinks that because of my particular insecurities,
yes,
I have manifested my talent in a way that would guarantee me not be in the big time.
Mm. No. Okay. I want to go so hard into this.
Really?
Yeah. This is my favorite shit.
When an inside job is required of me, it's a tedious
inside.
Yeah. Like if I'm going to get what I need,
yes,
in terms of approval,
yes,
self worth,
yes,
from within me.
Inside is in
the inside job.
The interior.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
It's a tall order.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need external shit all the time.
Yes, yes.
And I pretend like I don't.
Yes. Actually admitting that you want the shit you
a
want.
A prize?
Yeah. And then just going for it, I think, has value. Like being like,
manifesting? Yeah, but the thing is, like, manifesting this kind of stuff where people say that works, where you really kind of connect with your... The will or the magic.
Yeah.
Like, this one requires hiring people.
No, absolutely. This requires aligned action, is what the manifest community would say, right?
I don't know. Is that?
This shit is like my shit.
Really?
Not so much manifesting.
Aligned action.
Word manifesting is like kind of like tainted by The Secret and that whole thing.
Yeah.
But I go back to these kind of old, like these 1920s,
Aleister Crowley, like magic.
No, well, a little bit actually. But these new thought, like ambitious, like I'm going to become a railroad titan, guys.
Yeah.
Like, that should I like that. That
aligned action. That seems like...
Aligned action is... That's more like an L.A. like term. I think,
know, but that seems to reveal the racket of the thing.
Right.
Like, you know, you can manifest it, but there's aligned action needed. Oh, you mean you actually have to work for it?
Completely.
So this is... You're full of shit, right?
No, you know what? But here's what I think it is.
What?
This is the key. This is the thing.
Yeah.
You have to find enough self-worth.
Yeah.
Okay? To be willing to take... the action.
I can't even find enough self-worth to feel comfortable with eating bread for 3 days in a row.
I'm in the same boat.
Like, I'm like, everything's... I'm debilitated.
I got tricked
totally debilitated right now by carb shame.
Okay, so what... Because this is what came back to talk about. What...
What?
Got you? No, well, you know, it only takes 48 hours, by the way, to get the carbs...
Out?
Out.
I don't know.
Blood sugar spikes and the craving.
I don't know. I just kind of drifted. I was tired. Yeah. I've been exercising too much.
Yeah.
And then there was, you know, I'd made some spreads. So I bought a Persian bread and that all went.
I'm always embarrassed by how much I want to sit around and talk about carbs. Like I could talk about, like, it's so not.
It's not exciting. And
it's not. You're not an artist.
No,
I'm not an artist if I, you know, it's
but
like.
This is what makes us who we are. This is the machinery of art.
Yes.
It's
in
the
order
carb
to stay
talk.
Just stable
but,
enough.
But let's talk about this.
Yeah,
the blowjob situation, because the reason I felt bad, or not bad, but like, because I like the special a lot, but I also like You know, when I was coming up, there were just a couple of if you worked blue, you were a blue guy. And there's not this in the big picture, there's not that many blue acts. I think maybe during the time of the comedy boom, it was you didn't do it and the guys that did it were known for doing it. Fine.
Right.
But what I've noticed over the arc of what's happening with women in general and with men in relation to it is that women are taking the lead in filth. And I'm all for it, but like I've noticed it in a real way with young female comics just being dirty as fuck.
Yeah.
And I think men have conversely become nervous about being dirty because they're going to be judged in a certain way.
Totally.
So now it's like just the Wild West for female filth.
No, that's very interesting. Although I think like I would argue like those men being nervous about it, like no one's actually coming for them being filthy on stage. No one's ever minded it, right? Like
I don't guess
it's like, I don't know, like maybe.
I'm speculating.
They're just, No. Yeah. As am I.
They don't want it to land the wrong way. You know, I'm wrong.
No. I think that's and do you kind of think it's, well, what I'm sort of like pushing back against is, do you see it as sort of like free pass, right, for the women? Like,
no.
Oh, they just get to, because sometimes there is
No. I don't see that at all, because it's not easy for women to be dirty and to be, and to connect. Right. And it's never been.
Which is what people like sometimes say, like, this sort of like a woman, like, I mean, like literally if anyone's ever said like shock value to me about this, I'm like, I do everything in my power to like make this as boring as fucking possible in this other way. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
no, it's
like,
not a shock value.
If you think this is shocking, like this is the most prude like
approach.
Yeah, like it's approach.
It's almost a clinical approach.
Yeah, clinical. It's clinical. It's
the entire show is based around learning how to give a blowjob. Really?
Yes. A quest. Yeah.
A quest for the blowjob queen.
You know, like nothing actually really happens in the story, right? It's like all just kind of, there's almost no events. It's kind of just my changing thoughts over the time.
Some events. I mean, you keep it going. You finally do the first one.
And then
you do many. And then there's a revelation in the third act that you may not be as great.
Yeah.
As you thought you were.
Yes. There's definitely an arc.
Some self-exploration around the intention of having
it's
the responsibility of being the blowjob queen.
Yes, it's a reckoning. It's a, you know, it operates on a few levels.
But I think that the great thing about it is that I don't, as a man, I don't hear that side of it. You know, I know my side. Yeah. I remember my first blowjob.
Yeah.
It was a miracle.
Yeah.
It was a miracle.
Yeah. Well, the neurotic, I guess what it is like, the side of it that's this, the neurotic, like what always struck me was I kind of knew as a teen, like I knew that it was supposed to be like everything at that time is supposed to sort of be this like unselfconscious, just living, and that then you're going to recall that, you know.
Well, that's how it was presented to you.
But if you
really think about it, anybody who went through the sort of getting to that point where you take action.
Yeah.
Like that it's never casual.
Right. And I guess like that kind of like movies, like kind of like the male nervous teen like comedy, right? Like it's kind of like, I don't know, like American Pie or something. Like that kind of thing has been a little like just the teen girl as like the prize rewarded to the
It's all about
character.
Right. It's not the female point of view.
Yeah.
But in terms of addressing, that's an interesting thing that the idea that women get a pass on this stuff because, you know, men have had it for so long. I don't think filth I don't think filth is easy for anybody.
I
don't think it's easy to do to do it smartly or to do it well. I think there is shock oriented dirty comedy, but I don't think, like, they used to talk about it like it was some kind of crutch, and I'm like, you try
exactly.
It. It's
thank
not
you
easy.
Mark, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
No, and because, well, even like the thing is, like, I cringe almost when it's reflected back to me, like, that my show, like, if it's like, oh, it's about blowjobs or like, I, for one, say, like, I always, like, adjust the language and say the blowjob.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, like, oh, no, it's about the blowjob, like an idea, you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
the
like, when there's
concept.
Stuff about, like, they're, like, the penis, oh, yeah. like, your show's about the penis, I'm, like, literally horrified. Like, I've certainly never set out to, like, I have no interest in, like, telling jokes about, like, the penis. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is so, But because I'm talking about this one thing, it comes up, and then surprise, I have ideas on it and things I want to say and like point out, you know? And so I'm like horrified when almost they're like, I don't know, like the headline, like trolls the penis. I'm like, ugh, like if I were not me and I was reading about this.
That's what someone said about you?
It was like, yeah, and it's sort of like the opposite. I mean, I'm trying to, who knows what I'm trying to do?
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
No, it's a story.
Talking about one's work is hell. I mean, it's fine, but.
No, but I mean, you put together a story. Yeah. It's in the, you know, it's jokes that are put together as a show about, you know, coming of age show, really.
Yeah.
Around sexuality and around blowjobs.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
But like my point in talking about it more specifically is I think that blue comedy, or what it used to be called, blue comedy.
Yeah.
I think it's a great thing. And it was always kind of a great thing.
Yes.
And it does seem, and I like the fact that if you're getting that response where, you know, women are cringing or people are judging, you know, however they're coming at it, it's provocative. And
I can't believe it still is. And that's like almost surprise. Like,
it's more now in a way.
Yeah.
You mean, you know, post-porn? How is it still interesting?
And I'm almost like the embarrassment of not being sort of shocking enough. Like, oh, she, like the embarrassment of like, oh, does she think she's being radical? Like, Jesus, we've been talking about the blood. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just telling my own thing, right? But then there's other things where I will hear, like right now, kind of this, like in promoting it, kind of this like, will they put me on the talk show to talk about it?
Yeah.
And
really?
Yeah.
So there's a booking issue. How do we do this?
My feeling is like, for one, I feel that people with all manner of, you know, filth or whatever in their specials go and promote specials, right? And maybe they play a clip that isn't the filthiest part of the special, right? And it's understood that like a comedy special would be contain all sorts of things, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they think like I want to go on the show and talk about blowjobs or something. It's like no, I don't. Like that's them putting on there. Like I can easily go on this show and talk about like how the show is about language and the insufficiency of language. Like I can do the most pretentious version.
Just do regular panel and just be funny.
Right.
It's not like you're gonna walk out there with Annie Sprinkles 2x4 of dildos.
Yeah. By the way, like, no, back when I was mounting the show as like a theater show or whatever, mounting it, but whatever. It's like interesting word, but like not in like a sexual way, just like it makes it sound like there was a bunch of sets.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But there was this like nightmare moment where these PR guys that were involved in like sort of the theater world of it, it was like the New York Times was going to do something about it. And then I saw in an email that they had like reached out to the New York Times, like made some creative suggestions about the photography. And one was that I'd be eating a hot dog.
Right.
And one was that they were like, there's this bar and there's a neon sign outside of the bar, like in downtown, and the neon sign says sex and we think you should stand in front of it. And like,
there you go.
Luckily, like the photo was me in like a white button down looking like
just
utterly
studious. Regular
and,
photo.
And, you know, humorless. Yeah. And then, but, I have a love of, you know, filth in this. Like, I'm kind of like this prudish, like, sensibility who then, of course, like, loves and appreciates filth. And also, like, I love, like, the craft. So, you know, like, we were talking about, like, Skanks for the Memories or whatever. But it's like, I, like, study those jokes with this seriousness. And I think it's embarrassing when people, like, are unable to see craft. Because the content is
that's true.
Like, that's insane to me. Like,
well, but I do think like there's all kinds of sort of unspoken restrictions around how to do comedy and what comedy sells and whatever. But now we're in the age of everybody just finds their own market.
Yeah,
but like dirty comedy, blue comedy has always been around. There's been dirty ladies forever.
Yes,
like Belle Bartz, and I think Joan Rivers was pretty filthy.
Yeah,
if you gave her the time.
And if you went back to like probably like the vaudevillians and stuff, right?
They were the dirtiest.
Yeah. No, there was a
Mae
massive
West.
Coming back around. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, but there was this idea that it's not mainstream and that, you know, it's why Lenny Bruce got into trouble.
Right,
and people.
Right.
But there's never been that many smart, like Bill Hicks was totally filthy.
Yeah.
In a very kind of lyrical,
right.
You know, just, you know, arcing ropes of jism.
Yes,
you know, like
yes,
that kind
yes.
of stuff. And, you know, for me, it's all, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, you know, hearing that stuff on records or looking at underground comics or any of that stuff. There was that whole 70s trip that everything got pretty filthy in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that to approach it, I think that's what's interesting is the idea that that I'm seeing a lot more women do it in a fairly, in all the ways. Like I saw, and to address again, because I don't think I did it, the idea that you get a pass is you don't get a pass, but there is a full spectrum of lady filthy going on.
Right.
You know, in a way that I hadn't noticed it before. And I think it's relatively new. I mean, you know, Sarah was always cute and filthy, but now there's some, like, I see just dirty shit happening. And I like that zone.
Yeah.
Because it still makes people uncomfortable. I don't know why, but it's probably okay. But sex still makes people sort of uncomfortable when you break through it and you get a type of laughter that's very personal.
You know, yeah, no, it would be interesting that times, like, just the sort of classic thing of the person that's dead serious and seems like, you know, they're hating the show and the whole thing. And then, like, and I've just sort of accepted, like, oh, right, when my eyes pass over that woman, like, I briefly have this moment of, like, you know, she hates me and whatever. Yeah. And I'm not expecting, like, to, quote, get her, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, I do on something and I, like, couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't believe, like, a joke about, like, balls or something, like, literally, like, broke, like, that got her. Because it feels like
a joke about in the balls. Row? In the front row or something?
I feel like I could see everyone. Yeah, I always ask for more light to block them out.
Yeah,
do you like seeing them?
No. I like seeing a couple rows.
Yeah.
Just so I know
feel
I'm performing
connected.
In front of a I don't like floating up there in space. It's too weird.
I think I like floating a little
you
bit.
You do?
Maybe.
But you always project. I always project on people what they're thinking. They're not thinking that. They could be thinking about, you know, how they didn't pick something up in the morning.
No, I know. The assumption, the way you kind of, when you're watching anything, like, at least, I mean, TV, anything, kind of slip into these revelations or whatever, of like, your life in relation to even, like, the most simplistic things being offered up on the TV. Like, just, like, looking at the lamp on their thing and, like, wondering about, like, I don't know, what my lamps say about me or something. Like, it's just you sort of slip in and out in this weird way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah,
that's
I'm
the way
staring
people watch.
At them.
I just think, like, it seems – I think things were a lot filthier at another point in time.
Yeah.
And I think maybe this is sort of a contraction after the pornification of culture.
Right,
that
right.
people are like, we've had enough filth. You know, like, we get it.
Yeah.
Is it necessary? That kind of thing.
Well, when – no, it's – I'm just thinking about, like, the dental dam thing or the kind of, like – there's two – because in my mind, there's two things happening, right? With this sort of, like, women, like, let's say, like, they're becoming comedians, whatever, and they're – let's just say they're doing it freely. It's like they might not be experiencing it as – they're doing it to be shocking, right?
Right.
They're, like, let's say, doing it as observational humor, like, to get other, like, let's just say, other women who also, you know, like, they're just doing observational humor. They're talking the way they might talk among other women, let's say.
Sure.
And just to completely, you know,
broadly
create a category. So for them, they're just, it's that, right?
Right.
And then there's, like, this other segment of the audience is experiencing it at, like, let's just say, like, you and your shock value or whatever, or like, oh, you think it's real funny to be a woman and talk about dirty things. And they're like, no, I'm just doing observational humor. It, like, for those who are also not shocked by it, it's like, who's the comedy facing, kind of?
Yeah.
And I felt like when I started out to sort of, do, I don't know, filthy humor or whatever you would call it. Like, it felt like it had to be avoided because there was a
stigma?
Idea that it was like, it was all in reaction to, like, somehow that was it was about being a woman in comedy, almost like you were in some way, like, you're there with the boys and you're trying to, like, get in by doing filthy humor.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
It was almost like, so there was this period where it was like, to prove you're a real comic, like, you better be doing, like, jokes about pencils and kind of like this, like, I think I once overheard someone told me they heard someone else say something like, it's a woman comic. All you need to do is say something embarrassing or something.
Yeah.
And, like, I figured it out. That's what they're all doing. And I was like, but then I get annoyed by the, I have to prove myself by, like, not talking about these things because of your idea that it's shocking when I don't think it's shocking. Me and my, like, girlfriends don't think it's shocking.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so then I go back annoyed the other way, right? And then I'm like, no, fuck you. I am going to do the joke about, like, sex. And I'm, you know, I always want to do the thing, like, I just don't want to be slipping into the, you're right, I'm going to win you over by not.
Yeah, no, fuck it.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's irritating.
Push it the other way. Who the fuck are those people?
It's irritating every way.
And when people talk about these people that tell you those things, it's just one person. Who the fuck is that? You know, who the fuck is
no,
that
right,
guy?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, more damage has been done by one idiot who thinks he knows what he's talking about in a green room. Than,
oh, my God. Yeah.
Then, like, you know, it's like, no, what you got to do. So who the, half of those people aren't even successful.
I know.
Big ideas.
It's so funny because it's like, yeah, me reacting for, you know, 20 years to.
Fuck, yeah, to one guy that some idiot said. They used to do it to guys, too, though. Hey, you don't want to go blue, you know. You don't want to go dirty. It's just like, who the fuck are you?
There's also something about that there being a term, okay? Yeah. Like, there's something about there being this term for it, blue.
Yeah.
That gives it, like, it's like comedy jargon.
Yeah.
Right? And so comes with it the implication of knowledge of the field, right? So someone, you know, an idiot saying, you know, you shouldn't be dirty or whatever. I was always offended if someone said potty mouth one time and someone's like, I don't like you're, oh, you got quite a potty mouth. And I don't I don't think sex stuff is potty. Like, to me,
it's talking about a thing, you know, and maybe I'm making a bigger deal out of it. I just remember, like, I just always liked, you know, intelligent, you know, blue humor. And I guess maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm out of the loop. But I think that when I see women doing it now, that it is, like, it's interesting to hear all the women laughing, not the dudes, when a woman's being dirty.
Totally. Well, and because it's like, who's the audience?
Yeah.
Like, I was very aware when I was starting out, it felt like there were these two ways to go, sort of being prescribed, if you sort of looked at how it was. And it almost felt like, okay, it's either, I don't think it was like, it's below us. Like what you're, I actually think it was more like everyone else will think it's a crutch. I think that was the stigma, like, to prove yourself as a real comic. Okay?
Yes.
It versus this, you're a woman, so you can just get up there and say dirty shit, and that is inherently a punchline because a
people
woman is the setup.
It. Yeah.
And the punchline is that it's dirty.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like the premise. You know, the premise is a woman, and so that to me is like, well, that I didn't get into. This, I don't love comedy when I'm watching. Well, the other thing that's kind of interesting is like, sorry, I can't finish the thought, but just whatever, going one direction. It's like, you know, and this has been said before by a lot of people, I think, but like, let's say a woman watching a male comedian or a woman watching a ton of, you know, stories, you know, movies, whatever, featuring, they're used to sort of empathizing with a protagonist that is not their own thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
It's like, and,
yeah, right, right.
And
of
then
course,
the,
yeah.
And then same thing with comedy, right? And then it's like,
and they've gotten used to their voice not being represented.
Yes. And so they're used to, like, almost like just like empathy, like, you know, narrative empathy or whatever. And can laugh and watch like American Pie or something. Let's just, I don't know why this is an example, but and they're laughing with, they can extend the empathy to understanding the, and it's almost like the male audience in comedy hasn't been trained to do that.
Yeah, there's a conversation about that with race as well.
Totally.
That you know, we're all looking at everything through the sort of cis male white gaze.
Yeah. And then trying to avoid being like responding directly to that. That's like where it becomes, who's the audience and like whose expectations are you upsetting? So that's all I'm talking about, is the man thinking you're doing shock humor, the woman thinking you're in my case, let's say the woman thinking you're doing observational humor.
Right. Well, I just think like it's, I think it's important, you know, not unlike the Barbie movie.
Yes,
like,
which I actually haven't seen yet, but yes.
But you're basically doing the Barbie movie of blowjobs.
Yeah, okay. Wait.
Well, just representing.
Well, hopefully it won't be that successful.
Representing a spectrum of of a certain type of feminism, but also sort of a point of view of women, right?
I'm trying not to be like representational of my own, you know, like to me, the closest thing I could do to sort of being or doing what I think is like, not feminist, but is like to just treat my own experience.
Yeah. I don't think there's any feminist message in your blowjob story.
Yeah. Like I
just think that by nature,
like if people cheer, I get uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? Like thing where you're like,
right.
Oh,
yeah.
I
get it.
It's
not ideological. It's just a full throated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
kind of exploration.
One of the taglines.
Of the taglines. Oh, really?
I mean, I asked for taglines to see what would come back. You know what I mean? Yeah, and then I was like, no taglines. No taglines. Yeah. Forget it.
No, but I mean, it's like, you know, it is just a story being told about a specific rite of passage that it hasn't really been represented as thoroughly or as funny with a certain honesty. And by nature, it is sexual. And it, you know, to call it dirty is only to put it in the context of comedy, or to call it blue or anything else. Right. It's really not, there's nothing dirty about it.
Right.
Other than these are the jokes that have been deemed dirty when you're talking about fucking or sucking cock or, you know, or going down on somebody, whatever. That's blue humor. Yeah. But ultimately, it's just a story.
Well, my parents have seen it like a million times. Okay? Yeah. And
did they say things like, which guy was that?
Yeah. No, no, they respect it as you know, that level of memoir where we you know, but you know, like, they're kind of like rap on it if someone asks them, you know, like, was that weird for you or something or whatever. Like, they're just like, it sounds exactly like her and how she talks about anything. Like, it's just how I think about things.
Yeah, yeah.
That just happens to be the subject. But it's not like they showed up and suddenly, you know, came to the show and suddenly there was this, like, other quality to
me.
Like,
right,
as if they showed up to...
Well, that's the thing. It's not, like, it's not gratuitous. It's not shock value. It's a stand-up show about, you know, that. And I just wanted to make sure we drew attention to that. Like, when my grandmother saw my first special, my HBO half hour.
Yes.
Where I said fuck 90 times within the first 5 minutes. It was so sad because she had all her friends over in Florida.
Oh my God, incredible.
And I called her. I'm like, what'd you think? She goes, you're so filthy.
Oh my
and I'm like,
God.
So sad. Because it wasn't even, it was just me saying fuck a lot.
Which isn't,
it wasn't even
that's like, the idea of that being filthy is
well, it is to
like
her.
The next level hysterical.
I mean, you got to make the joke.
Cursing.
She's right, but it's like, you know, make the joke. I mean, she's, you know,
you
she
mean
was,
she's right, like,
well, like, it was unnecessary fucking.
Was it?
You
mean, are you like, it's lazy? Are you one of those?
Well, no, I just didn't think about it enough. And I'm doing it more now, too. And I don't think it's lazy. Like, I think there's
I was putting that
in
the tone.
No, I know.
Right?
But, like,
I don't think it's lazy.
I've been doing more fucks lately.
Yeah.
Like, I can go without fucks. Or well-placed fucks. I think it's just a matter of, like, gratuitous fucks.
Yeah.
I don't think it's lazy. I think, it's undisciplined. Is that lazy?
I think it's rhythmic, right?
Sometimes.
And
sometimes
I just am tired a little bit of this thing I would hear through the ages of kind of like, I don't know. It felt like, you know, when there's one talking point kind of, it felt like this one talking point was, well, you know, it's lazy. And it's just like, shut it.
Yeah, but then you get stuck in joke structure to a point where, you know, it kind of... it kind of takes the thrill out of it. You know, it's a personal preference.
Yeah.
I don't think we should...
I like it always.
Yeah. I don't think we should talk too much more about it because we're going to give away the whole show. And also my producer will be mad at the extra work I'm giving him.
I know. I forgot that we're not settling in for 2 hours.
but I did want to make sure that we talked about the show and what was it about.
They need to watch it all the way through. I hear completion rate. You hear this?
And follow through till the
94 minutes.
Yeah, to the happy ending.
Or I'll get buried. Thank you though.
There you go. Again, Get on Your Knees is streaming on Netflix starting tomorrow, January 23rd. Hang out for a minute, folks. All right, look, tomorrow we're posting the latest Ask Mark Anything episode for Full Marin subscribers. There are 12 past installments up there on the Full Marin for you to listen to whenever you want. As the podcast has grown over nearly 14 years, has your approach to booking guests remained the same in present day compared to when the show really popped in 2011? No, it's very different because usually I was drawing from my, you know, people I knew or people who I knew them, you know, it was sort of, I don't know that we were working with a booking agency at that time, but eventually you got to be in the loop with people who are moving through interview programs. So it's very much different. Get all the Full Marin bonus episodes and ad-free WTF episodes by going to the link in the episode description to sign up, or you can go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. This guitar came out good. It's weird what an echo box can do to a slide guitar. ¶¶
Boomer lives. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere. Ooh.